Hi, and welcome to The Thing About Cotton, a podcast brought to you by the International Cotton Association. We are your hosts, Imar McDonough, Camille Clouzel, and Katie Farron, members of the ICA's Women in Cotton Committee. Join us as we explore the anatomy of the cotton value chain and bring awareness to the industry through highlighting female leaders and achievement.
So, the thing about cotton. The thing about cotton is that people don't always realize how important politics can be in this industry. As we're now in the second half of the year, we only have to look around us to see the shifts in politics happening on the global stage. Whether it be all eyes on presidential race in the US or parliamentary elections in India, to the change in power from the center to the right in many European countries, or even conversely, the shift from the center to the left in the UK, you name it. Just about every stone you turn at the moment has an element of changing politics. And the cotton industry is no different. Following recent elections at the European Parliament, we want to shed some light on legislative changes which may have a broad effect on the global cotton industry. In a recent letter addressed to the European Union Council, the Committee for International Cooperation Between Cotton Associations, CICA, raised concerns about some of the EU's policy proposals, namely the Product Environmental Footprint Methodology, also known as PEF. The association's complaint focuses on a potential threat to the cotton industry arising from the capacity of the legislation to favor man-made fibers over natural fibers. And that's the concept and the debate that we want to get into today. And that's why we have an expert in her field joining us today. We're delighted to be joined by Eva Biele.
Eva serves as a director at Hill & Knowlton, a renowned global public relations consulting firm, which specializes in European sustainability policies. With over a decade of experience navigating EU regulations, particularly amidst the evolving landscape of the EU Green Deal, Eva brings insightful expertise to our discussion. Throughout her career, Eva has demonstrated a commitment to diverse environmental and social issues, showcasing her proficiency in multiple languages and her aptitude for impactful analytical work. Her extensive background includes significant contributions to sustainability initiatives, social inclusion projects, and technological advancements. Hi, Eva, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's really great to be part of this initiative. And it's been really amazing for me as someone who works mainly in the EU Brussels bubble to get to know the whole cotton supply chain and try to understand the complexities of this natural fiber, from how it works with the land and inputs to the many benefits it provides beyond just the clothes that I'm wearing. So I'm excited to talk about this intersection between EU policy and cotton.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for joining us today, Eva. I think you said it pretty well that cotton itself is a pretty complex fiber and industry. And I think that EU policy is not really very different in its complexity. So we're very happy to have you joining us here today to kind of break down and dive into the world of EU policy and how it relates to our industry. I know also, you know, just to start us off, you got back from the Better Cotton Conference that took place in Istanbul last week. How was that?
It was really amazing. I think it's always great to get to meet the growers from around the world and the entire supply chain. And I keep learning every time I meet people from the cotton supply chain. I learn more about how the industry works and all the different levels of complexity from obviously growing the cotton itself, but also in the gins and the spinners and the mills and the entire value chain up to the brand, and seeing them actually meet each other at this event was quite an interesting thing to see. So, and I think since this is a podcast about women and cotton, I think a really encouraging thing to see is that there were a lot of there's a big focus on gender, and there were a lot of female cotton growers there as well, talking about how they work with their communities. And I think that was quite an inspiration for all of us who attended the conference.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We love to hear anything that connects women in cotton, and we can promote that as well, because as we all know, they have a very important place throughout the supply chain, particularly in the beginning of it.
Absolutely. And I think there was a lot of discussion also around how I mean, like it is everywhere, but a lot of women are, their labor is invisible in cotton. So I think bringing that to light was quite powerful.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, just to jump right into the EU policy side of things, I know there's a lot to unpack with the EU policy proposals currently on the docket, but would you be able to highlight the main and relevant points of the EU Green Deal and within that, the Green Claims Directive?
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, you already touched upon one of the very, very relevant ones. There are more than 100 Green Deal files, and a lot of them are potentially relevant in many ways for the cotton industry. And really, it covers everything from financing to value chain due diligence to product design to waste management to reporting and making claims. So there's everything in there. But I think, as you highlighted in the intro and also as you mentioned right now, there's two ways that I think are really going to potentially have a significant impact on the cotton industry. And one is the regulation of how you substantiate the claims that you want to make for products on the EU market. And the other is the eco-design parameters, so a product, a group of legislation that will really look into how to make products sustainable by design. So not just about claims, but about how you should make the products in the first place. And within all of that, the Commission has been working in parallel to define what is sustainable. How can you measure a footprint of a product over its life cycle? So there has been, since 2013, a working group, which is not legislation in itself, but a working group, a technical secretariat that have been working to define the product environmental footprint category rules to make sure that in all of that legislation that's happening, we can point to something that's harmonized and that will be fair in terms of looking at the life cycle of a product. And really, if you need a harmonized approach to making claims, then logically you'd also need a harmonized methodology on what is considered sustainable and what is considered a high impact and what's considered a low impact.
So Eva, just to pause here, you're talking about that product environmental footprint. What you're saying,
yes,
if I understand correctly, is that it's a proposed or decided, I don't know at what stage of the legislation we're at, methodology to actually have a science-based calculation of the environmental footprint of the entire life cycle of a product. Is that right?
So the category rules are rules. So they're not, there's no legislative basis in rules, in the rules on their, by themselves. There's a commission recommendation from 2021 that recommends their use when category rules exist. And the category rules for textiles, for apparel and footwear are about to be finalized now. So you could say the commission recommends their use, but there's no legal basis for their use. They're not mandated anywhere. Now, there is talk of potentially mandating them as part of the Green Claims Directive. That's the letter you referred to in the beginning to the Council, was to pressure them to not include the product environmental footprint in the Green Claims Directive. But the Green Claims Directive is also not finalized. So in EU legislation, you need the three institutions to agree on the final text. The Parliament has made its position clear in March. The Council just finalized its general approach in June, and the Commission obviously wrote the original proposal, but those three still need to enter into what's called trilogues to decide on the final text. And that's where it's really important that the Council's text has a stronger nod to the PEF. So there's something to really keep an eye on in the next 6 months or more. I mean, I don't think they'll conclude within the Hungarian presidency over the next 6 months, but it's something to really keep an eye on as the directive progresses, because if Green Claims Directive, or indeed if the eco-design for sustainable products, there's a delegated act there, which is secondary legislation that will define what eco-design means for textiles. Mm-hmm.
So at this stage, not mandatory recommended rules that will apply to textile. And can we dive deeper into this one specifically before we move on to some other aspects of it? Why do people say today that this current methodology favors man-made fiber over natural fibers?
Yes, so there's several reasons why a lot of people are saying that. I think It comes from the fact that life cycle assessment is quite difficult to do, and comparative life cycle assessment is almost impossible to do when you consider that the data that you have from growing cotton, comparing cotton grown somewhere to cotton grown somewhere else, mm-hmm. is very difficult to do, or even cotton grown in the same place from one year to the next, because there are differences in soil type, there are differences in weather conditions, differences in rainfall. All of those parameters make it very difficult to compare cotton even to itself. And when you then start to compare cotton to other fibers and combine it into a single score, with all that wealth of data and all those many parameters, of course, compromises need to be made, and there needs to be agreement in the technical secretariat on which parameters to measure on. And what has happened here in the category rules that are in their current draft form is several main drawbacks, and I'm going to focus on three. One is the lack of microplastics indicator or macroplastics indicator. And as we know, as there's a lot of scientific basis that shows that cotton will biodegrade in many environments, synthetic fibers, if they shed plastics, micro or macroplastics, these do not biodegrade in the environment. So there's mm-hmm. a big missed opportunity there to account for microplastics. A second is in the economic allocation of the value or the impact of the cotton seed. So the way that the impact of cotton is calculated is that there's an economic allocation of the value of the cotton seed versus the value of the lint. And if you look at the climate impacts and how much the plant actually absorbs, then that allocation is not necessarily fair, because the economic impact of the seed is around 10-15%. But if you look at the biophysical properties of the cotton seed, then it might actually be something like 60% of the impact that goes towards the seed itself. And the seed, of course, can be used for feed, can be used mm-hmm. for cotton seed oil. And if that is done, then, of course, there is land use that will not – you don't need to grow – soy or cotton or something else to feed the cattle if you use the cotton seed to feed the animal. So I think that's a really important point. And then the third point I wanted to mention is it does not account for any of the benefits of cotton. And that's everything from the plant's ability to sequester carbon to the considerations of all the livelihoods that are created along the value chain. So, yeah, I think there are, of course, in any group, in any project, if you have to make one big indicator for everything, you have to make compromises. It's not possible to include data for everything. But these three are really key, I think, and that could lead to a skewed treatment in favor of synthetic fibers.
Yeah, and that's just the thing that, I mean, and I've been looking at this for a while now, but trying to understand the logic behind the life cycle assessment. It's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the life cycle assessment for cotton is not measured from point to point in the way the life cycle assessment for man-made fiber is measured. Is that fair to say?
Well, it's very hard also in any life cycle assessment to define the system boundaries. And I think this is something that was discussed a lot. And of course, it's easier to go back to the farm than it is to go back to the creation of fossil fuels. So there is a bit of a discrepancy there, simply because it's a different supply chain and it's formed in different ways. And in that sense, there is a disproportionate focus on the impacts of cotton, because it's just easier to measure how, well, not easy, but it is possible to look at the origins of how a seed was planted, but much harder to look at the origins of how oil was formed thousands of years ago.
Does the current state of the PEF methodology take into account the fact that man-made fiber is made of fossil fuel?
It does take that into account, but of course it doesn't. It looks at the extraction of fossil fuels, but not in the formation of fossil fuels. So there was a lot of debate, as I understand it, there was a lot of debate in the secretariat on where to put the system boundaries, but they concluded that it would be impossible to go any further back than the extraction of fossil fuels.
So one of the things that you touched on within the elements that the current PEFR regulation is missing is, again, the full life cycle of the product and the missed economic impact, as well as some hints towards traceability. So that leads us to some other acronyms besides PEF. We are hearing often CSRD, CS-triple-Ds. We're hearing a lot of acronyms like this. I think this somewhat hints towards the notion of reporting data sets and traceability. Could you explain a little bit more about all of that?
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny, like someone last week referred to it as alphabet soup. I thought that was quite a good a good way of looking at it. So the CSRD is actually, that's not new. It's it is replacing the old non-financial reporting directive, and it was adopted several years ago. It's entering into force now. So the CSRD is about corporate sustainability reporting. So it mandates non-financial reporting for companies, and it used to be just for the non-financial reporting used to be just for certain companies that were registered on the stock market and above a certain size, but it's expanding the scope to almost all companies at the EU market, active at the EU market, including non-EU companies that have sales of a significant volume at the EU market. And what this directive asks for is data for a whole host of non-financial impacts, from biodiversity to carbon emissions to worker well-being to governance. So it really asks for a lot of data throughout the entire supply chain of a company. But that one is based on the company itself. So it's about the company's annual reports and what kind of data needs to be in there. And whether or not these inputs are relevant is determined in a materiality assessment. So it looks at whether it's important or not.
If you're a brand that has retail shops on high street in Europe or even on the internet, how much are you supposed to know within that legislation or the rules or what is mandatory for them to know as far as traceability comes?
So for traceability, it's a little bit, there's a different legislation that deals with that. In the CSRD, it's mostly about, this is data on the company's operations, and it's determined on the principle of double materiality. So the impacts on the, and the risks for the company itself, and the impact that it can have on society. So if it is determined that the impact of its activities could affect biodiversity, then the company needs to report on biodiversity. So a lot of companies are now doing big materiality assessments to find out what within these European indicators are relevant to them as a company. And if it is considered to be relevant for them, they will need to report on it.
Yeah. Can I ask, Eva, does that mean, for example, if a brand or a retailer that's selling in the EU, whether they're domiciled in the EU or not, but their products are entering the EU market, they need to know the origin of their product down to farm level or down to the farming practices? Is it to that level of detail? And then the supply chain participants' activities along the way, is it to that granular level?
It's not really so. There's another directive, the CS-triple-D or the CS-DDD, that deals with the due diligence of what is happening in your supply chain. So that directive is more, that directive specifies that you need to know what's going on in your supply chain and that you need to mitigate risk and that you need to know who your suppliers are. The CSRD, it's really about providing data of your own supply chain. So if your supply chain involves farms, then yes, ideally you would want to import data from farm level, but this directive does not in itself specify that you should be able to trace back to the farm. Mm-hmm. The due diligence directive as well does not mandate traceability to farm level, but it does ask that you know and mitigate any risks that might be happening in your supply chain down to any level.
Yeah, it is alphabet soup, isn't it? There's so many acronyms to try and get your head around. And I mean, I got PEF and LCA were my main ones to, you know, make sure I understood what they meant. But it does have a massive impact on the supply chain. And obviously, we're talking about what's happening for retailers in the EU, but we've got merchants, we've got garment producers, spinning mills, back to farming communities. So each one of those supply chain segments will be impacted to some degree in the need to provide data. And I think we're all very conscious of that, all three of us being merchants and sourcing cotton and putting it into the supply chain. It is complicated, it's complex, but I think we're probably agreed that the data provision to some degree is necessary. We can't ignore it. It's not going to go away. We're going to have to find ways to provide data. But then the onus is on that supply chain participant to make sure that the data they're providing is also verified, correct? It's, you know, the end use of the data is to put it on a label so a consumer will know that they're buying a sustainably produced product.
Yes, I mean, there's so several overlaps. So one part is about, you know, providing the data so that companies will be able to make claims, because you can no longer make claims if they are not substantiated. But the other part is just to provide the data so that the company can have an annual report that is accurate according to the inputs that it inputs and impacts that it has in its supply chain. So there's a lot of different ways that this data will be used, and I think you're right that there's no getting around it. But that's another point, I think, in relation to our previous discussion about synthetics and natural fibers. I think the supply chain for cotton is just that much more complex. So for synthetic fibers, they have, relatively speaking, a shorter supply chain. So in that sense, it will be easier to trace than it will be for cotton, because it is much more complex. And the risk of, I worry about brands potentially deselecting cotton because of the complexity of getting all that data as compared to the complexity of getting data from a synthetics value chain.
So it's the unintended consequences that could come from this type of legislation. And, you know, when you look at the economic impacts of it, cotton's grown in 75 countries. It supports 100 million families, and it's got over 32 million cotton growers. So the social impact of what we're talking about here is potentially huge, isn't it, Eva?
No, absolutely. And I think this is really, it's really interesting, because when you look at the intention of EU legislation, I think it is to make sure that, you know, there are no negative economic, social or environmental impacts of the way we consume products in the EU. But I think it's really important to point out these considerations to the EU and sometimes help the EU work together with, you know, there are policy areas that look at social impact globally and there are policy areas that look at environmental impact socially. But other than in a reporting regulation, try to bring it all together and try to help the EU understand some of the unintended consequences that could arise from the new legislation that's coming.
Yeah, I think, Eva, you know, you mentioned the unintended consequences of EU policy. And of course, EU policy is meant to affect what's happening in the EU and the footprint of companies in the EU. But of course, these textile companies specific to the cotton industry, of course, their actions in the EU are going to trickle into how they're behaving in countries and markets outside of the EU as well. I know you've been doing a lot of work over the last several years with the US Cotton Trust Protocol. What have you seen as the effects of the PEF and the Green Claims Directive in markets outside of the EU? And what is the US specifically doing?
I think it's, I mean, the PEF directly, I haven't seen any impact of it yet, but I have just seen, I mean, the US Cotton Trust Protocol is one such example, a drive around the world to provide impact data and to be able to link that to the physical cotton. And I think the US Cotton Trust Protocol is a good example of an initiative that is really trying to trying to look at, well, how do we make sure we can track the cotton throughout the supply chain and link that cotton to impact data that tracks year-on-year improvements in water use, soil health, etc. So I think this is an initiative that is trying to meet what the brands will need. But in the US, of course, as well, there's a lot of different movements on the green guides are being updated. So there's another, the FTC green guides are being updated. So there's also some claims and labeling requirements that are moving in the US and different types of legislation passing in different states as well. So generally, not just in the US, but also around the world, in Singapore, in Japan, in various different geographies, we're seeing generally, we saw the EU adopt the CSRD, which was several years ago now. We are already seeing similar reporting initiatives emerging around the world. And so if the EU adopts something quite strong on green claims, asking for life cycle assessment data, I think we can assume that other regions around the world might look to do something similar as well. So there has always been a trickle-over effect from EU legislation to other regions in the world. And even if there isn't, I think, like you said, a lot of the bigger companies will simply just, okay, they have to do it for the EU. Either they leave the EU market or they choose to do it everywhere, because you don't want to have two different approaches, one for the EU and one for the rest of the world.
Wow, thank you so much, Eva. That's a lot of information for us here, and hopefully our audience will have a clear view on this. And if not, they can reach out for questions to this group. There's one thing that we like to ask to all of our guests, and it's, what is the one thing about cotton that you would like people to know? People within the industry or outside of the industry, consumers, anyone?
Well, what I'd really like for anyone to know about cotton is about what I mentioned before, the positive externalities, the benefits of growing cotton in terms of everything from the value and uses of the seed to the power of carbon sequestration, and of course the many livelihoods, the crop, and its value chain support around the world.
Eva, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Well, that was a lot of information from Eva, and I really enjoyed our conversation with her. I feel a lot clearer on a lot of points, but I think if we have 3 points to take home after this episode, I hope our listeners will remember mainly the points that she made about why cotton is, you know, needs to be evaluated in a different light versus man-made fiber. And I think her main 3 points highlighted the microplastic elements, the cotton seed, and the livelihoods. Those 3 points, what did you both think about that?
Yeah, Cam, I mean, a great conversation with Eva overall, but you know, you mentioned the microplastics indicator and the miscalculation of the PEF in that regard. I feel so often when we hear about microplastics outside of our industry and our work, I get the feeling that the conversation lends itself to talking about Tupperware, plastic water bottles, etc. But these microplastics come from our clothing as well. Each time we throw our clothes in the washing machine, you know, they shed microplastics. So I think we as an industry need to do a better job to promote the benefits of cotton as a natural biodegradable fiber. One thing that we've talked about in our discussions, the three of us and with Eva as well, is that, you know, especially because these trilogue discussions are starting in just a few months in September, the main point that our industry needs to get around now is pushing to ensure that this PEF is not made mandatory. You know, only after we get to that point can we then go and focus on improving the PEF and improving the life cycle assessment and ensuring that it does a better job of including the benefits of cotton that we discussed in our conversation with Eva.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we do want to support the Green Deal, but we need to actually provide the information that the EU legislators need to understand, because we could have a really a really unpleasant outcome for the EU if they transition and they're not really becoming more sustainable by using a measure that doesn't accurately reflect the life cycle of natural fibers. So it is a concern, and I think anybody listening who is in the cotton industry or the natural fiber industry should look to their own businesses and their representative associations to see if they can find an avenue to offer technical advice to the EU. There is a technical secretariat, so you know there's an avenue for this discussion to happen. Certainly the ICA is involved in having those conversations, and the ICAC is also educating other cotton associations about what's happening. So it is very topical and it's being discussed. So I think people need to make themselves aware of it and the potential negative outcomes for cotton.
Yeah, and I also think it's important to note that these negative consequences or potential negative consequences for cotton, they are unintended. It's just there hasn't been enough education around how we can improve the PEF and how cotton actually is a more sustainable fiber. You know, it's not that the Green Claims Directive is finalized yet, but we do have an opportunity to really push as the cotton industry and other ag industries as well to improve this.
And Imar, you had mentioned to us on a separate conversation regarding the traceability and the issue that it represents for the cotton industry, how indeed it's complex, especially in comparison to mine-made fiber. How is that so for mine-made fiber? What was your statistics there?
Well, you know, again, just through trying to understand what the competition looks like in the man-made fiber space, when it comes to the PET, the production of those plastic chips that go into making polyester, there are 9 producers globally. So if you compare that to the number of spinning mills in the world, the number of garment factories in the world, it's phenomenally different. And also, a lot of the time, polyester is made as a filament. It's not actually going through the spinning process. So it can be quite a separate supply chain compared to what we're looking at globally for cotton. So I think that there's a very small footprint for those involved in man-made fiber versus what's happening in the cotton supply chain. And as a result of that, it's not easy to get everybody in the cotton global cotton supply chain to understand the impacts, but it is very much something that people have to be aware of. Over 100 million households, as we've said before, depend on cotton for their livelihood, and the millions of people in the supply chain will also be negatively impacted.
Right. So that's that exact complexity, which is why cotton may be deselected, is actually what it brings its value, because it combines together so many people in the value chain. So we shouldn't shine away from it.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Thing About Cotton. We hope this conversation with Eva helped shed some light on the very real impacts of upcoming EU legislation and the need to act to ensure this legislation does not unintentionally favor synthetic and man-made fibers. If you want to learn more about today's episode or have other questions about the cotton value chain, please feel free to email us at podcast@ica-ltd.org. Don't forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google, and follow the Women in Cotton Group on LinkedIn and Facebook to find out about our upcoming podcast episodes, events, and engage with men and women in the industry. Special thanks to the International Cotton Association for giving us this platform to deliver the podcasts.